Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
All right, welcome to Ringside Wrap. It's Wednesday, November 2nd, and just want to start the show off by mentioning that it is the ninth anniversary of GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. We launched on this day in 2002 at exactly 6:05 p.m. Eastern Time. Some of you folks will get that and why we did that. I want to thank everybody for their continued support over the years, for visiting the site, checking out the shows and whatnot. A lot of contributors over the years, a lot of people working in the background to bring you what you see at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com all the time. So I want to thank all them for their efforts and you folks for checking everything out and continuing to come and be sure to spread the word. Not sure if Les is going to join us. Have not heard from him yet. Know he had some surgery today, so don't know if he'll be with us. He's not on the line currently, but I do have a good partner in here, Mike Sempervive. Mike, how you doing, sir?
Not too bad, and if you don't know why it would be 6:05, then you may want to delve into the site further.
Yeah, exactly. you know, a lot to cover this week. Also, you know, in addition to the GWH anniversary, it's normal tradition is to name the Hall of Fame class, and we're going to discuss that toward the end of the show. Just do want to say that if you go to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com right now, you can check out on the main page or in the news and notes section, you can check out who made it in this year and find out a little bit more about how that process works and who's involved. Like I say, we'll go into it a little bit tonight, but there's going to be a lot of analysis and discussion on it tomorrow night on Peach State Pandemonium. Where, of course, there's nothing but history lessons every week to be learned. Going to go in depth there. So let's start it off this week and go ahead and hit the Muppets Take Raw, I guess. God bless. You know,
yeah,
if I wasn't...
Could you
get
any blame for that being in Georgia?
You know, I got to tell you, the most interesting thing about Raw were the pictures from Jonathan Williams from our Georgia Wrestling Now show. Him and Nemesis, his co-host over there, their photos from the show were actually more entertaining, photos of themselves more entertaining than the show. As a Muppet fan, hey, you know, any chance I get to see the Muppets, I mean, I grew up with the Muppet show. I loved it. I can still look at it now and laugh my ass off. My kids get it. They love it. You know, we'll sit around and watch the DVDs every now and then. Good corny stuff, but, you know, good for kids and whatnot. And you know, some tongue-in-cheek adult type stuff that you're going to get, kind of like with the old Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons. But it just doesn't belong on Monday Night Raw.
Well, thing is, it would even be fine, you know, once in a while, and Les's head would explode at this, but let's say, because Noah does this in Japan, and all the Japanese promotions do it, where, you know, certain times a year, and it's okay to do it in the States, too, where you have a wacky show. But you have a wacky show when all the other weeks of the year you have a straight show. I mean, it's okay to do something like this once in a while, but you better be humming along really well, and it better not interfere with what you're doing to actually make money. And that's the whole thing. They seem to be going out of their way to not make any money and to not make any sense. And it's just, we've been talking about how Raw could affect WWE for over a year now. You know, I didn't like the way it was going into WrestleMania and having Cena look like a fool. And it's like, you know, they made the match for WrestleMania. They at least did some long-term planning. You know, at least they'll be able to... WWE's been at their best when they've thought something out for a long period of time and they've built towards something. They've done a terrible job with that. I don't know why anyone wants to see The Rock at Survivor Series other than to see The Rock. I mean, I just... So it's like their aversion to money, their aversion to making any sense, their aversion to getting anybody to care. I mean, it's scary when you have more people now than ever who just, they're not watching it live. Some of them aren't even watching it on the DVR. If they catch it Saturday on, like, Universal HD, you know, okay, maybe. That's bad. You know, it was one thing for SmackDown, and that's not good when the mentality is there. But for Raw, nobody... And again, I mean, I guess it's getting over a 3 rating. It's got, like, a 3.1. But, I mean, you're using The Rock. You're using The Rock. And the thing is, after all of this is done, after Rock is in and gone again, after Nash is in and gone, after Foley's in and gone, after Triple H is in and gone, Undertaker, by next year, he'll have his one and at WrestleMania. Then what? What have you built towards? I mean, it's just, I don't know. It was just, they've just been bad shows. It hasn't been, you know, good sport entertainment, you know, wise. It hasn't been entertaining. The comedy that they try has not been good. Things aren't making any sense. Things are just, you know, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Cena, unless you're going to turn Cena heel, which I always thought was a stupid thing, even though it's always been a split thing for him, it's like, well, what else are you going to do with him now other than turn him heel? You know, when the Rock's on at the beginning of the show saying, you know, no, you and all the kids that like you and all the women that like you are all idiots, and I'm here, and I'm doing it because I'm getting tweets, and it's just, huh? It's, I don't know. And I guess maybe it is entertaining to somebody, but I can't be getting that old. You know, I know I'm not that out of touch. I just don't think this is very entertaining or very good. And I know I'm not the only one, because it just seems to be more at a fever pitch now with people just going, I don't want to see this. It's like Lance Storm with JR. You know, I'm not going to watch if they make fun of JR, and they did, you know, and making fun of JR again. It's just like, again, and it's not entertaining, even if it was a feud that wasn't rooted in, you know, just, you know, complete behind-the-scenes things that no one should care about anyway. Even if it wasn't rooted in that, you know, which makes it so extra ugly, it's not doing anything for you to draw any business or do anything. So what is it doing there? It's just, I don't know. It's just Waldorf and Statler said it the best when they yawned.
Yeah, they were. That's the funny thing is, besides Animal, just because of the drummer in me being my favorite, I love Statler and Waldorf, and I always loved them on the Muppet Show. And I figured, okay, you know, not knowing going in what they're going to do here, you got to figure they're going to be sitting in a balcony. Sure enough, they were. They're going to be making snide comments. Sure enough, they were. And actually, a couple times, I was actually caught by surprise that they, you know, that they were saying some of the things they said, because, man, it was like pretty spot on when they were actually knocking what you were seeing. My favorite line of the night actually came. I can't remember. I think it was during the segment where Jack Swagger and Vicky Guerrero were out there with Kermit and Miss Piggy, and Santino comes out. And I think it was Santino said John Laryngitis. Is that not the best name? I mean, yeah, I love that. That segment was actually funny for what it was. But the rest of the Muppet segments, I could have done without the bullshit. I'm sorry, I just could have, and it was just overkill. And the worst thing is, they ended up having to cut Jim Ross out. But then again, maybe that was a good thing because, you know, we just had more of Michael Cole.
Remember when Jim Ross was on WSB in Atlanta doing the Falcon show and being on the sidelines?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I'm happy he wasn't on. I don't know where they're at next week. I forgot where they're going to be at.
And I hate to say that because I love Jim Ross and I want him to be part of Monday Night Raw. But
especially not in the hometown again. In one of his stronghold towns.
Yep. Let's see. WWE. We had a champion suspended.
Evan Bourne.
Yeah, is he suspended in midair? That's what I want to know. Obviously, his first
had a cough there.
He's
for the picture.
first violation of the company's wellness program. He'll be out for 30 days. This on the heels, actually, too. Heath Slater just a week or two ago. Same deal. So. I guess there's, I don't know, is there, You know any more about it than what I said?
No, and you know, everybody's pointing to I guess marijuana, which I don't know. I don't know.
And Lord knows we've had our shows endorsing marijuana. We've had plenty of those.
I walk the line here, but no, I won't walk. I don't understand why it's a concern for them. I do in the in the aspect of, well, it is illegal, and you know this, that, and the other. And yes, I understand that. But again, it's hard to fathom Mason Ryan walking around.
Yeah.
and Evan Bourne being suspended. If it is for marijuana, and I'll be honest, if it's, you know, they usually take the titles off, guys. If that's the reason they didn't do it was because it was marijuana and not something that was worse, then I guess I'm okay with it because at least, you know, yeah, he got beat, but they don't lose the titles. And I don't know. I just alcohol scene, you know, I don't know. It's hard to do it without sounding like you're completely condoning marijuana. But it's really, it should be one of the least things on their priority list, although – again, I mean, it's also hard not to say for most of the general public, I assume, still, you know, well, if it's illegal, they shouldn't be doing it anyway. So, I don't know.
And, of course, Friday the announcement comes out that Maurice would not be returning. She got her release. I was kind of surprised by that because I know she was due back a few weeks ago after going through some surgery for an abdominal hernia. I was kind of shocked by it because, I mean, she'd been working pretty damn regularly and was a consistent, you know, part of the picture.
I guess, I don't know. I guess I'm not really surprised, but it just, it makes sense. I mean, she they weren't doing anything with her. I mean, her and The Miz had the best thing going on. When they were just kind of, you know, blowing each other off back and forth and you know, messing with each other. I thought that, you know, continuing on with that would have been the best thing they could have done. And it's just like you have somebody there who, not a great actress or anything. She knows she's there to be hot, and she knew how to play to the crowd and how to be kind of bitchy about it. And obviously, you know, having the built-in, historically professional wrestling heel voice of a French accent, you know, for the most part, except for Dino Bravo there for the longest time. If you had a French accent, you were a heel in most places. So she had all this stuff. She stood out with the platinum hair and everything, and they couldn't figure out a way for her to get to, like, Tori and Trish and Stacy Keebler-type status. So if that's, I mean, that to me would be the only reason she was there. Was to hit that sort of status, and if they're not going to be able to do it for her, she shouldn't be there. And if WWE can't figure out a way to utilize her in that way, looking, you know, she looks like a main event person. She didn't have an interview like one, but she didn't have to. She just roll her eyes and make faces and you know, put the hand up, and people would have been fine with that. So if they can't figure out a way to utilize her better, then, you know, hey, take her off the payroll.
Well, you know, now she can go and, you know, fulfill that that role that they've been missing in TNA so badly. You know, the French Canadian cousin of Angelina Love. So
they could never. They'd be insane. I don't think she'd go, and I don't think they'd be able to really afford her. You know, there's the other thing too of they, and I don't know if this was a timing thing in WWE. Maurice has done Playboy topless spreads and things like that, or I don't know if it was, you know, fully nude or not, but you know, the timing of the PG stuff, I don't know if it was that was the case or they just weren't able to hook up with deals, but I'm surprised she wasn't utilized that way more either.
Let's move on to a little MMA talk. UFC 137 this past weekend, UFC 138 coming up, and, of course, a big deal with Fox to talk about. So, first, UFC 137, Mike.
Yeah, they did good, decent little show. This was obviously supposed to be, at first, originally, GSP and BJ, or I'm sorry, George St. Pierre and Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz missed a few press conferences, angered Dana White, riled him up, got angry, got upset, took him off the show. For Carlos Condit, who was the second best option. who's deserved a title shot, or is very deserving of a title shot at 170 pounds and is a fresh, cool matchup for George St. Pierre, but not as flashy and exciting as Nick Diaz. He gets the title shot. GSP gets hurt, hurts his thumb. He's out of the fight. Condit is put up into the air because they don't want him to lose his title fight, so they don't want to schedule him against somebody else on the show. So he takes the breakout. As this is going on, Dana White had changed his mind on Nick Diaz and figured, you know what, I'm going to get my use out of this man, the Strikeforce champion that we have brought over, the controversial man who's fought here before, is incredibly popular and that drives him nuts. He's got to figure out a way to use him. Well, put him in there with BJ Penn, who needs a fight. It needs a flashy fight with some standing because he doesn't deserve a title fight, but you got to get the most you can out of BJ Penn. Puts him in there against BJ Penn, with the thing being that neither one of them really just want to super fight each other because they have actually a lot of respect for each other. So it's Nick didn't want to take the fight. You know, Dana goes, oh, you're going to take the fight. You know, you missed six press conferences and flights and all this sort of stuff. You're taking it. So they make the fight, but you know what? It's going to affect Nick Diaz because he doesn't, you know, can't be in the main event. Ends up getting in the main event anyway when GSP drops out. They have the fight this weekend. Diaz just too big and too good for BJ Penn, beat him up. And then afterwards, calls out GSP, who's sitting in the front row. Says, you know what, I don't think GSP's really hurt. I don't think the thumb's hurt or the hamstring, the knee is hurt. He's faking it. GSP freaks out. Literally minutes after the fight or a little bit after the fight, a press release is released saying GSP is angry. He's upset. He is so upset that Nick Diaz has questioned him and questioned his honor and his pride and his professionalism and his French-Canadian heritage and whatever else. He's going to lay the beating of a lifetime onto Nick Diaz. At the press conference afterwards, Nick Diaz is rallying up Dana White. He's being the contrary, obstreperous man that he is. Dana White says, you know what, we're so happy Carlos Condit's people have decided to let Carlos step aside and take a different fight. And Nick Diaz is going to get what he wants because he's going to fight GSP because GSP's upset. And thank you, Carlos Condit, for stepping aside, which then led to Carlos Condit's cap coming out saying, we never stepped aside. They're making the fight that they want to make, and we're disappointed and we're upset. Now, I know that was a lot of words. That was a lot of words right there. But you know what? That sounded like professional wrestling storyline.
It absolutely did, and who could blame Condit, I mean, at this point? And you know, obviously, I mean, you know, no reason for them to deny the fact that they didn't, you know, get out of the way for this. And I don't know, I mean, when is the new fight going to take place, and then when is Condit going to get his shot?
Well, and that's
how
and
far
that's
down
the
road?
Thing. I mean, well, I was talking with Brian Alvarez doing Wrestling Observer Live on Sunday, and it was like, you know, Brian, it happened too quick afterwards where it's, and I'm not saying they set this up from the beginning, but I think they just made a snap decision to go with that and say that the press conference and everything and then try to smooth it over later. Because Sunday, it wasn't until Sunday they kind of, in fact, I think it was later on Sunday when I heard about it. I hadn't heard about it before doing the show. The Condit's camp said, no, we didn't step aside. And I don't think it's that scandalous or a big deal or anything like that. I think they were just opportunists. But it is, you know, you always wanted to separate yourself from boxing, and there are just some things that are intrinsically tied in together. And this is one where MMA fans like 5 years ago, you know, 10 years ago said, we'll never be like boxing this way. Well, this is a very big boxing move to do. And it is kind of a douchey thing to do when you look at it from a mainstream sports sort of thing, because you're lumped in with boxing that way and stuff like that. But with that said, the people that understand that it's about promotion and making the money fight and doing what you have to do. So, you know, it's fine. The Diaz-GSP fight is going to take place Super Bowl Sunday. It will not be Sonnen and Anderson Silva. As Sonnen had hoped, Silva's saying he doesn't even want to fight him. But definitely it's not going to happen Super Bowl Sunday. So we're going to see GSP and Diaz on Super Bowl Sunday, that's great. And that's a show that's very underrated every year. It's in Las Vegas on Super Bowl Sunday, the biggest gambling day of the year, arguably. I think it is. I don't think Final Four is actually bigger, but it's the biggest gambling day of the year. It's great to have a show in Vegas. Boxing did it every year. They always had a big fight there. HBO would always show it on a Saturday night, and UFC's kind of taken that position. So it's going to be a big night. Condit, I think, is supposed to fight on a show coming up. I got to double-check against who and exactly at what date, because I guess that's up in the air now, because he wasn't going to fight at all and risk his number one contendership. So, and again, you got that problem there, too. I mean, it happened at 155. It happens in other weight divisions where, you know, you have that number one contender. If he loses to a guy that maybe has already lost to the champion, I mean, that's bad. If they put him in there with Josh Koscheck, we've seen Koscheck get beat by GSP, including the last time, which was super hyped up in a mega fight. You know, but we've seen him get beat twice. If they put him in with Condit and he ends up beating Condit, do you want to see GSP Koscheck again if GSP gets by Diaz? Of course not. You don't want to see GSP Fitch again, or you don't want to see Condit and Fitch, because Fitch is probably going to beat Condit. Nobody wants to see Fitch fight GSP. Nobody wants to see Fitch fight, period. Even amateur wrestlers, you know, the biggest, slowest ones who are blind think watching Fitch is boring. So you got a shaky situation there, because, you know, Condit's a guy on the rise. He's pretty much untouched. So you want to make sure he's in the best possible position. And, you know, they're going to be walking a fine line that way with who they put him in there with, because those guys at 170 are, you know, the top tier is tough. It's just who hasn't been beaten by GSP yet.
Speaking of a snap decision immediately following UFC 137, a couple of guys call it quits, and one of them at least appears to have been a snap decision. Maybe going
back on
BJ Penn, right?
Wait, what would you say about the decision?
Well, just being a snap decision, BJ Penn apparently, I guess, is already, I guess, going back on talking retirement,
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, he was pissed. He was more pissed than anything, because, you know, I don't think it wasn't a fight that he really wanted to take. It was a bad matchup fight for him. And, you know, he's trying to make it back into title fights. And Penn fought Machida at 185 for K1 years ago. It was like 04 or something like that. I can't even remember when it was now. It was when he was out of UFC and just doing the Rumble on the Rock shows against Diaz and was in K1 in Japan for a while. He can't do that with his weight anymore, and the guys in the UFC, are just too good. I mean, he cannot fight at 170 pounds. I mean, he went up there and upset Matt Hughes a couple times, and there's lots of guys up there that he could beat with no problem. But the reality is, the top tier guys he can't beat. He can't beat Frankie Edgar at 155 pounds right now. So it's like, what do you do with him? He's BJ Penn, so you got to put him in high-level, you know, fights and in flashy fights. And, you know, if he starts losing them, even though people are going to love to see him, it's going to really take away a lot of the shine. So you got to be careful with who you put him in against and who, you know, and he's got to be careful with who he goes in against to maximize everything. So it's not a fight I think he wanted to take. And he was angry afterwards. He got beat up. His left eye was closed. I mean, it's that style of Nick Diaz. Diaz is too good on the ground, which is a Penn strength, obviously. You know, Diaz has got stamina that's, I mean, freaky, absolutely ridiculously freaky. I mean, he's a, you know, a marathoner for God's sakes. And Penn is never, it's been one of the things with him, has been conditioning and stamina has been one of his big knocks. So it was a terrible style matchup for him. And he was pissed off and angry and beat up and just, you know, damn, what am I going to do now? Maybe I'm done with this. You know, I got daughters. I'm tired of getting beat up. And he was, more pissed off than anything. So him backing off doesn't surprise me at all. Mirko Krokop, on the other hand, and I can see Mirko doing the show in Japan in February, and probably should. I would put him in there against as much of a tomato can as you possibly could. I don't know if Shannon the Cannon Rich is available or somebody along those lines, a Warpath Villarreal or somebody like that, because I'd like to see him go get one more high kick knockout in Japan, and that would be kind of cool to relive the Pride days one more time. But he is a guy that I believe this is it hit for him, because, again, he probably should have retired a long time ago in a way. I'm glad he didn't, because he got to build a fan base in the UFC and kind of turn around his image and career in a way after leaving Japan. So. And getting knocked out by Gabriel Gonzaga early on in his UFC run. So I'm glad he was able to build his way back up, but I think he's going to definitely be probably stay retired unless it's that one fight in Japan.
All right. And what little I know about UFC or MMA, actually, I guess at this point, I've actually learned from you, Dave, and Brian. So I may be wrong on this, but I'll look at the UFC 138 lineup for Birmingham this weekend. I got a sock drawer I got to rearrange.
That's the one thing about those shows. Yeah, it's, excuse me, Chris Leben and Mark Munoz. And I like Mark Munoz a lot. You know, he's a damn good wrestler. Chris Leben is entertaining. I always like seeing Chris Leben get beat up. He was such a great heel on the initial season of the Ultimate Fighter show and getting into it with Koscheck and Bobby Southworth. And you know, he's done a great job turning himself around. He's got a great story, you know, up and down life story. But very dedicated, has been very dedicated, has put on some great fights, and it's going to be a great, you know, probably a pretty great show, but there's a reason that these shows are held. It's to hook up people in you know, Abu Dhabi, in England, in Australia. They got to do these shows, and the good part about it is, you know, they're free on Spike TV. They're on tape delay. They've tried to offer these things up live on pay-per-view and on the replays. It tanks every single time. People just don't have the interest in it. It seems, to me at least, to be one of the more... The shows from overseas, I guess... I don't know if it's a mentality coming from Japan from back in the day, but when they go to Australia or England or there's some sort of big time change when it comes to people watching shows, time zone change, it's like they go into the mode of watching K1 from Japan where I'm going to stream it for free. I swear that mentality, that's the mentality that a lot of people have. It's just like a natural thing to stream the show no matter what. So this is going to air for free on tape delay on Spike anyway. I can't remember what else is on there. I think it's a couple Brazilians. I think it's Alves has got a fight. God, who else? Hold on, let me bring it up here. Brad Pickett, you know, and Kerry Edom, who are both from over there, are going to be. So it's, you know, Parash and Diabate in the 205-pound. I mean, that is the equivalent of, let's see, what would be a good C show? NWA main event back in the day on TBS, would that be the C show? Wrestling Spotlight for WWF, that's the equivalent of that 205-pound matchup.
Yeah, or NXT by today's standards, right?
Yes, beneath Superstars International.
I guess a huge calamity of sorts, at least averted with the deadline of November 1st, Fox and DirecTV. A lot of sports fans can breathe a collective sigh of relief, and including, I guess, at this point, UFC. Man, that debut could have been hurt pretty bad, I guess, right?
Well, you know, it would have been really would have been a blip on the screen. You know, Fox Sports.
Really?
And by the way, it always admits, I know that these empire companies with their tentacles into everything. I know they don't all the branches and you know don't all work together. But it's amazing that Rupert Murdoch and they own both things. They own both things. Yet the networks were putting too much pressure on DirecTV for carriage fees and all this nonsense. You know, this affected the UFC last year with Versus on DirecTV, and they were actually off for quite some time. But all the talk about that was the fact that the NHL season was being affected, and really secondary to that was the UFC. You know, the UFC won't even be a blip on the radar as far as the importance of if those channels would have went because they were – you know, not even, it was just Fox. It was the Fox Sports channels, and it was FX, and it was their, you know, their big money channels. So, you know, it would have affected the UFC, but it would have affected everybody so much that life would have just moved on, and then we would have gotten a next fight. Even though it would have sucked, it really wouldn't have been, I don't think, that epically bad, because what are you going to do about it? So you just have to chalk that up to a loss. And you know, again, a lot of those people, if they want to see it that bad, there's enough people with cable.
And obviously, we'll talk quite a bit about the UFC debut on Fox next week. Let's move on to TNA. I don't really want to get too much into their product at this point. We kind of closed in, I guess, gave some spoilers away at the end of last week's show about what's going to happen this week. Made our feelings pretty damn clear on that. And if you watch it, God, you know, I pray for you. TNA picks up a new VP of public relations, Jules Wortman, supposedly pretty damn good at what he does. I guess he's had his own business there in the Nashville area for years. He's going to report directly to Dixie Carter. I don't really know what this means in terms of importance to TNA, but God, they could do all the they could use all the help with PR they can get at this point, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that, and they do a good job in New York and Manhattan. They did a good job in Philadelphia, putting stuff up everywhere. But it's like, you know, and again, that's you got to do that stuff. Be on the buses and the trash cans and all that sort of stuff for, you know, your local crowd to hopefully get them to get tickets. But they've got to do a better job, you know, rebranding themselves. And you know, it's not, and I don't mean rebranding the way that they have done it. And you know, their reintroductions to themselves over the years since 2002. How many of those have they had, these rebirths? I don't mean that. I mean really tightening up their PR and trying to get more stuff out there where they're put into stories about wrestling. They're put into stories about pay-per-view. To really crank that up. They're in more sports business daily things. I mean, getting more active and really doing a better job and a more refined job trying to get the word out there to hype yourself up. And if this person could do it, you know, good on them. You know, if they're not throwing too much money away. They've made moves. Bruce Pritchard in. I guess Vince Russo's got a lesser role. The Dave Lagana being brought in again. I guess there's something about this whole India thing that's going on. But still, you know, they're making some moves and they're making some changes. I guess slowly here. So I guess you got to see what's going to happen. I guess at least they're trying to do something. You know, they've been. We've seen so many bad moves. I mean, can you say they're doing anything awful right now? Yes. But, you know, can it get any worse? I guess we'll have to see.
Haven't heard much on Jacques Rougeau, but obviously a cancer scare of sorts, but really didn't turn out to be cancer. I guess he is having some prostate issues. Hoping he turns out okay.
I don't know. If my prostate was all messed up, I'd think the worst, too. I couldn't help it.
Oh, absolutely. Apparently,
I'm not looking forward to 50.
Yeah, apparently the size of a grapefruit, that cannot possibly be good. He was told there was maybe a 20% chance, I guess, that it could be cancer. Don't know yet. Don't know much more than that right now. The latest that I got on Barry Windham, I guess, was that it was indeed a heart attack. He's, I believe, in stable condition, last I heard, and hopefully he's doing well. I don't know if you heard much on those guys or even Killer Carl Cox in the last week. I haven't heard anything on him.
No, after Mike Moynihan, when he talked to Blackjack Mulligan on Sunday, he ended up being a massive heart attack. And, you know, I guess, you know, Barry's got, you know, some, I guess, I don't know if it's liver and kidney issues or his liver issues as well, which, you know, didn't help everything there. But I guess, you know, regaining feeling, and because they were worried about just being a stroke because he was numb. But he's, I guess, regaining feeling in his extremities all again, I guess, at a good pace. So, good. And that's been the one thing about, you know, recently Jerry Briscoe and Carl Cox and Jacques Rougeau here and everything. At least everyone, as it stands right now, is, I don't know if they're resting comfortably, but at least they're resting okay, which is good, because that was a scary little rash of things that happened there.
I guess if you got the FBI reporting on your fans, I don't know what it means for you, but the FBI, of course, issuing a report, and per the report, talking about the Insane Clown Posse, basically saying that their fans are a loosely organized hybrid gang. The report states, most crimes committed by Juggalos are sporadic, disorganized, individualistic, and often involve simple assault, personal drug use and possession, petty theft, and vandalism. However, open source reporting suggests that a small number of Juggalos are forming more organized subsets and engaging in more gang-like criminal activities such as felony assaults, thefts, robberies, and drug sales. Sounds kind of like the Occupy crowds to me. But, you know, here's the thing on this. I don't even follow that company. I have no idea what they do. Don't pay attention to it. I don't know. What do you know about them? And are they making way more out of this than they've got? I mean, what do you know about this? Anything?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's
seems kind of out there to me.
Well, it's just, it's concerts, and it's, if you always
if they're going to do that, you know, shouldn't the FBI have a hell of a lot of reports on a hell of a lot of, organizations?
You don't blame someone for keeping their eyes open. You go, okay, here's a group that always meets over and over again. It's like, say you just had a week-long festival. You had festivals, but you had that every day, or you had it constantly, and there was such a tightening. Sooner or later, subsets form, things form. I mean, that's how it works. So, you know, keeping an eye on things or checking it out is one thing. To keep too much of a track on juggalos, I think, is a little much. I mean, they just seem to go to these shows, and it's the same thing. You know, they're at wacky hours, and I'm sure people are getting effed up. Obviously, they are. I'm sure people are meeting people there and doing nefarious things afterwards and hooking up and things like that. But I would tend to doubt that this is going to become the next, like, you know, Jonestown cult or, you know, massive, you know, rampaging group of running down with painted faces and sickles, you know, in the rich part of town trying to wreck shop. I think that's a little dramatic.
Well, I wonder if the FBI is actually watching Vince Russo fans for the cult they are, because, you know, that's a hell of a fan base right there.
Who are the million?
Yeah. There's that many. I guess we're at the point of the show. We can go ahead and talk about it. Normally we would be talking books right now, but Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame. Actually, before we get to that, let me address something. Got a couple emails this week from some listeners saying that we're not giving Ring of Honor enough love lately. Reason being, I think Les is the only one that actually sees the shows as they're happening. And me and you are having to catch them on the rebound. I haven't had an opportunity to do so. And they haven't really had any big shows recently for us to talk about. So other than TV at this point, not a lot to cover. I mean, you got anything you want to talk about this week?
No, because we're going to be talking about them more in the next upcoming couple weeks here, though, too.
I'm a little bit behind on the show, but
I think we're going to be talking a lot about Ring of Honor here coming up into, you know, kind of going into December.
Yep.
So relax, people, and there will be Ring of Honor guests back on.
Yep, and Dragon Gate coming soon, too, in a couple weeks. So anyway,
Gate guys coming on, too. We need Gargano again.
Yeah, we need to get back to doing some guests now that we're back on regularly. It's a little easier to do that. All right, Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame Class of 2011 announced today. This was the 9th anniversary, of course, of GWH, as we announced earlier. The Class of 2011, Stan Hansen, Ric Flair, Ted Allen, the Road Warriors, Doug Gilbert, and that is Doug the Professional. That's the old Professional Gilbert. Not the one that wrestled mostly in the 80s and 90s. Let's see, Ron West, referee extraordinaire. And, of course, the Oates brothers got in. Long time coming for those guys. Congrats to all, and I want to thank everybody who has basically participated in this process over the years and, of course, our newly expanded selection committee for their participation in this. You know, just off the top of my head, primarily beforehand, before this year, it was strictly historians that would vote on this and GWH staff and writers. And this year we opened it up to two living members of the Hall of Fame to participate, and we invited pretty much everybody we could contact. Got back responses from pretty much most of them, including, for example, Bill Watts. I'm going off the top of my head here. Bill Watts, Jim Ross, Michael Hayes, list goes on and on, but that's just going off the top of my head. This, of course, was our 9th class. And you can find out more about who is in our Hall of Fame already, who preceded these folks, by going to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, hit the Hall of Fame link at the top. And we're actually working on revamping that section to give profiles on each individual that is in. Mike, your thoughts on the class of 2011?
I could have taken all of these guys. I mean, you know, right off the bat, and then, you know, obviously the honor of voting in this, and I don't drift too far outside of my time frame unless there's somebody I'm really familiar with. So,
well,
you know, right.
And actually, since you bring that point up, let me go into that a little more, too. And keep in mind, we're only going to kind of gloss over this briefly. Not going to go into too much detail, but I'll say this. Because we'll be doing most of that tomorrow night, I'll be joining the Peach State Pandemonium crew, and we'll be spending a couple hours talking about this in depth. But, yeah, we split guys up in genres. We have one, you know, basically say one category is the 1800s. Going all the way up to 1943, we have a category of 1944 to 57, 58 to 72. These are split in territories between primarily about management and about the era of and the evolution of wrestling in Georgia. This was also the first year that we've included post-1984 people, where it was basically 1985 to 2001. So anybody whose primary body of work within Georgia for a Georgia-based promotion, which actually included not just independents in Georgia after Vince McMahon came into Georgia Championship Wrestling or, you know, took over the company here, it actually includes Jim Crockett Promotions for the time they were here, as well
and
as
you
WCW.
Know what, Rich, I want to add into that, too, because people maybe as time goes on are going to look at that and go, well, Crockett bought it, they were national. You got to understand, if you were alive then, if you looked in the wrestling magazines, all the ratings for the top 10, they were all listed by where you were from, Georgia, Pacific, Northwest, you know, Mid-South, all that sort of stuff. It still felt regional. It felt regional into the early 90s, at least to me, and I think for most people. So that's the reason when you go, Why would the national guys, the Midnight Express solely worked in Georgia for their first 6 months into Crockett. I mean, there are just, and there are things that were organic that came from Techwood and came from there that as time goes on, you got to remember, if you put yourself there, it's not nostalgia that, well, WCW was national, then they weren't. It still felt regional and it still had a regional feel, even though the TV was national.
Well, if we're gonna, and if you were to exclude that on that basis, saying it's national, you'd have to exclude a lot of the Georgia work from what, 79 maybe, when cable
WWE
really boomed. You'd have to take off the last 5 years of the national TV era. So
yeah, and people need to realize too, it's like WWE. If there's a New York Madison Square Garden one, yes, in 1984 they were but they weren't clicking outside the Northeast in many places, you know, because of
right.
the territorial system. So you have to take that into account later when people are looking at 85 to 01 and going, well, would Goldberg count? Why isn't Goldberg on there? You got to understand that if you were there in the mentality, it was just different there as far as it wasn't like they were a national promotion in a way in 1985. They were, but they really were not.
Right. One thing about the 1985 to 2001 era when I was putting it together, and I put this out to the selection committee when the ballots went out, was, you know, this was an experimental phase, whereas we were putting together the Jim Crockett Promotions, WCW guys, with the same people who were working for promotions like Jody Hamilton's promotion or Crusher Blackwell's promotion or, you know,
yep.
working for, you know, for Ben Masters. All those guys are mixed together. If it appears at some point down the road that maybe somebody's not getting a fair shake or they're, you know, maybe they're not getting at least a good look because of maybe there's some more national names on top of them because it was of the WCW era, then we can extract that out. But I got to tell you, based on the first run of this, the fact that Ted Allen made it in from that era with Ric Flair, that says a lot. So that tells me that, you know, I mean, it could have just been love for Ted Allen because, you know, God knows everybody down here has benefited from that man for more than 30 years, that, you know, that he was in this business. maybe next year it doesn't stand out like that, but at least from the first year, you know, the thing right now is this is working. So we're going to stick with that another year. We'll see how it goes. We'll see what it looks like. And, you know, as I say, if we need to split that apart and say, okay, here's the National for that era and here's, you know, but my only concern then is it turns into the WCW Hall of Fame, you know,
well,
if you break it out that way. And I would prefer us to not end up having it look that way, but,
it,
at least for the first year, it worked.
Well, and you know why it won't be. It's because the people who are voting on it, you know, they take it seriously, and it's not a joke. And, you know, people can say, I think, and this is what people need to understand, too, who look at Hall of Fames and look at regional Hall of Fames and, like, what Midland Gateway does and things like that, when they see the Oates brothers, and think of them on a national scale. Can't do that. It's not like people go, well, oh, God, well, Ted Allen's in. You know, it's only that way because, you know, hey, he's a Georgia guy and this, that, and the other. No, it's for the influence and everything else that goes around it. And, again, that's how important he was to hear. Now, would you put him in the Observer Hall of Fame or in the Gable Hall of Fame? No, I don't think that you would. That's irrelevant. It's whether he belongs in the Georgia Hall of Fame, you know,
yeah.
Wrestling 2 and the Torreses and Freddie Blassie and got all of those guys from over the years. It's whether they belong in this one. And that's, as people, as younger fans and people that may listen to this later on and who visit the Ringside Rap or visit GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, and there's always this hullabaloo about the Observer Hall of Fame. When you look at this one, you go, you got to dig into it. You got to look into the site, and you got to go, why were these guys like that? And you get these great stories, and like, tomorrow night you're going to hear great stories. And you understand why these guys were, and why, let's say Jimmy Valiant in Memphis, why they actually meant so much to those people.
Yep. So, anyway, you know, the 1800s to 1943 era, nobody made it in this year. Leading the votes there was Milo Steinborn. Coming up behind him was Joe Stecker.
You know, Les was the only guy alive to see those guys. Oh, well,
hell,
he's saying because he's not here.
What are you talking about? He trained Joe Stecker. Let's see.
He repped the Gotch Hackenschmidt match.
Yeah. The 1944 to 1957, Art Nelson led votes, but missed induction, didn't get enough. Behind him in votes was Chief Big Art. I got to say, Art Nelson, he's probably a nudge next year. He's probably in there just based off what I saw in the trends in the voting, and of course we can talk more about that tomorrow night. Let's see, 1958 to 1972 is the group from where Doug Gilbert, the professional, came from. Of course, hugely successful masked wrestler here in Georgia in the late 60s and early 70s. And of course, he was here beyond 72, but the body of work for him in Georgia, as he relates to Georgia, was in that era. So he ends up making it there. Coming up behind him, not real distant seconds, but tied for second, were Buddy Fuller and Joe Scarpa. Of course, Joe Scarpa, also known here as Jay Strongbow. It's going to be interesting to see which one of them comes out ahead next year, with Doug Gilbert not being part of the process.
I'm really surprised Scarpa's not in. And it's not my place, actually, to touch that one. So I don't. Hey, but it kind of surprised me that he's not. That will be interesting next year. I think he, you know, when the Observer Awards, they always use the Assassins as, like, you know, will it be next year? That may actually be the case for in this case.
And of course, Eddie Graham came in behind Fuller and Scarpa with votes as well behind them. Let's see, the next era, of course, 1973 to 1984, which had previously been the farthest we'd gone in terms of I guess ballot classes, as you maybe would identify them. Stan Hansen made it from that era. Actually, wait a minute, let's go back. Okay, yeah, we covered Doug Gilbert. So Stan Hansen makes it from the 73 to 84 era. Right behind him, Jack Briscoe. So that's one of those probably assassin kind of things happening next year that you were just talking about. And not too far behind Briscoe was Dick Slater.
you know, I was wondering too, the anybody in the class, because we've heard that some people we've interviewed
and
over the years.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, just the thing of, you know, will anyone hold anything against Briscoe? This isn't like Carlos Colon and Bruiser Brody, but does anyone hold anything against the Briscoes? And, you know, most of them, and most people have softened on this, you know, they did what was right for them and right for their business and wouldn't change anything anyway. A lot of people accept that and understand that, and they like those guys and know what it is. But I wonder if anybody holds any ill will towards, you know, even a little bit towards them for making the sale, because it is the Georgia Hall of Fame.
Oh, I had a couple of people right after we did the Briscoe tribute show, and I think we talked about it back then. This was, well, God, almost 2 years ago. Basically, they said, well, they'll never listen to us again. They'll never come to the website again because we paid tribute to Jack Briscoe. Well, fine. Fine. Okay, whatever.
Hey, you know what? We would do a show for a lot of people, and I think we all like that, and Gunkel, or at least like pictures of her.
You know, here's what I was going to say earlier. You know, just looking at that group of guys, I mean, that's my era growing up, and 73 to 84. Here's the list of guys not in from that era: Austin Idol, Buzz Sawyer, Dick Slater, Ernie Ladd, Harley Race, Jack Briscoe, Jake Roberts, Joyce Grable, Kevin Sullivan, the Mongolian Stomper, Ox Baker, Paul Orndorff, Robert Fuller, Roberto Soto, Ron Garvin, Ted DiBiase, The Spoiler, and Wahoo McDaniel. That's a hell of a lot of talent.
Yeah, really. A lot of people.
And those
you're
are the
gonna
people
be able to
not
make really. Well, that's, you're going to be able to make some great cases for some people. Man, it's going to be fun, too, because, you know, I'm not going to say it's more fun now, because I love hearing the stories, but when you can have the stories from guys like Les, who are there, you know, like doing the Ohio tours, plus you get footage of, like, somebody making the case for Buzz Sawyer with Tommy Rich, with Roddy Piper, with Kevin Sullivan, with just, you know, you name it as it goes along. It's going to be even more fun because there's so much footage on all of these guys, too. At least, I don't want to say so much, but, you know, far more than there has been in the past, even though WWE's usurped it online. There seems to be a lot of stuff.
Right, and let me put this out there as well. I pointed this out earlier on Facebook in a discussion about some of these. Mildred Burke, actually, out of the 1944 to 57 era, she actually pulled in the most votes of the women that are actually on the ballot, and that includes right now her, as I said, Joyce Grable in the 73 to 84 section, and Donna Cristianello from 58 to 72. And you know, I don't know, at some point maybe we look at maybe pulling some of the women out and maybe giving them their own category and seeing how that goes. It's consideration down the road. You know, the only problem with that, too, that I can see is that you get into the, well, we're trying to make it easy for this person or that group or whatever, and I want to try to avoid that if at all possible. But, you know, there is a lot to this. A lot of people take this very seriously. And that's exactly the way we would want it. I mean, you know, you don't want a Hall of Fame being any other way. The 85 to 01 group, as we said earlier, Ted Allen and Ric Flair going in from that group. Ric Flair leading in votes there, Ted Allen coming up behind him. The closest that did not make it, and this goes back to the explanation of it being WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions, you know, maybe carrying a little bit more weight, you know, off the selection committee, it's Sting, and then Hulk Hogan behind him.
Well, I don't know.
But like I say, it worked for Ted Allen this year, so we'll give it another shot before we work. You know, look at breaking them apart to make sure that people that made a living and made the Georgia, you know, the independent scene in Georgia in the 90s, what it was. Well, you know, we'll see. But for right now, it's like the BCS. If it's working, that's what we're going to stick with, you know?
Yeah, it's just hard to say. Sting would be the one you go, yeah, that somebody, I think, that doesn't consider WCW after a certain point, you know, anything Georgia, you know, where they want to distance themselves from it. He's the one because they'd already bought Central States and Florida, and they, you know, they bought Dallas, and that's why he was there, not Dallas,
you know, watch territory and try to take over the syndicated TV, and that's why they were there. So I can see somebody making a case against him for that, and I wouldn't blame him for it, although, you know, I'd listen to a case for him to get in, too, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Hulk Hogan, again, you include the time frame, you look at the revitalization, different era, you got to factor in different things, but, yeah, I can see you making a case for him, too, but...
The thing you have to remember about Hogan, too, and this is the thing, is on the fringe, you know, one thing that we do at Georgia Wrestling History is at the in the nostalgia section, Jim Crockett is considered a Georgia promotion, at least in terms of the period they ran Savannah. So the Savannah,
absolutely.
everything in Savannah counts as Georgia work. Anything, you know, anything from a Georgia-based promotion, regardless of where it ran, is considered
like Georgia All-Stars.
Georgia. So, you know, technically, WCW, being headquartered in Atlanta for so many years, technically it's a Georgia thing. And that's the way we've gone about it, because you can't have one and not the other. It's got to be all or nothing. And if we take WCW out, then we got to take Crockett. You got to take out Crockett for all the years they ran at Savannah. And I don't see doing that.
No.
But anyway. And one other question I did get via email tonight was an interesting question that we've never really explained. The ballots and how they're put out. Who goes on the ballots? Primarily that is me and a couple other people, just based on our knowledge of the history over the years, who's been here, who maybe had the most impact during a certain era. As people go in from an era, we'll add more names from that era. Not necessarily to make sure that, you know, somebody's going to get in from that era, but, you know, to keep it competitive and you know, make sure that you're not diluting it so much that there's only, you know, a couple of guys left in that era, because then all of a sudden those guys are going to go in. So you got to keep adding to the mix. But we also added a chance for people on the selection committee to include write-ins for anybody that felt wasn't already in our Hall of Fame and wasn't included on the ballot that they felt should be on. And those, of course, will be added to the ballot next year. So those will be
Rhubarb Jones.
So those will be considered next year. Not Rhubarb Jones. Let's see. Then, of course, we got the miscellaneous category, which regarding that, that's mostly managers, referees, promoters, bookers, people that worked around the office, general, you know, TV people, this, that, and the other. Of course, Ron West makes it in. I was really surprised he hadn't made it in before, but he finally managed to get just enough votes to get in. Closest behind him was Jim Cornette. And right behind him on his heels, our partner Les Thatcher.
Cornette and Thatcher better make it in, or I won't be happy.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes next year. Like I say, that was the tightest race of all in terms of category and who landed first, second, third.
I'm only saying that too because I don't want Les to beat me up for the jokes from earlier on.
I'll say this, right behind them, not too far away, was Ben Masters, and rightfully so, and J.J. Dillon as well, coming in close. Let's see, the tag teams, we do split those out separately here, which some people should do. I won't say
mm-hmm.
who. Let's see, making it in from there, the Road Warriors, Animal and Hawk, and the Oates Brothers, Ted and Jerry. And
no brainers.
Yeah,
yep. No brainers. The Road Warriors, and if you wrestled them in that time, you would say, no, they don't belong in. They hurt me. They killed me. They started an era of muscle guys running over guys. You can throw up all these negatives that you could try to, I guess. The fact of the matter is, Road Warriors were the Road Warriors. Legion of Doom was awesome. If you get a chance to live through it, awesome. And as a kid, at least as a kid, you didn't care about the fact that there were guys getting squashed and it may not be good that they're beating up guys and not selling and this and that and the other.
to me, it was kind of like Stan Hansen. They just beat people up, and it was kind of scary, and it was reality brought into wrestling, and they were very, very good at it. The same way the Oates brothers were, in a completely different way as far as being athletes. So I got a chance to see both of them. I'm completely satisfied with both of these.
Yeah, the Oates brothers, you know, amazingly, and a lot of people may not know this, you know, they had that nice run here in the 70s, and you know, the thing about Georgia was they didn't really, at least the Atlanta office when they were with the NWA, wasn't real fond of pushing the guys, the local guys. You know, it was you need to go make your living somewhere else and then come back. Well, the Oates brothers did that. You know, they worked their way in here. And they went elsewhere, and then they came back established, and they put them together, had a nice run with Gordman and Goliath and that era in the, I think it was 76. And then, of course, coming back in the 80s and you know, throughout the 80s and 90s, you know, they were the old standby. If a promoter wanted to draw a crowd and make some money, you put the Oates brothers on the card, period. They're going to draw. You find an angle to work them into. And, you know, these guys were phenomenal workers and you know, just, I don't know, just outside the ring, great guys, you know. Here's the thing that's really surprising to me is the Armstrongs, still not there. Because right behind, let's see, who barely missed it, next up would have been the Von Brauners. Right behind them, Ray Gunkel and Buddy Fuller. And let's see, the Armstrongs right behind them.
Are Gunkel and Fuller already in?
No, they're not.
And as singles, though.
Well, Gunkel is in as a single, yes. And that's primarily, you know, singles work and his work behind the scenes and management and all that.
Yeah.
Fuller, not yet. As we mentioned earlier, he's from the 58 to 72 era. He came, let's see, he came closest. That was him. He was tied with Scarpa behind Doug Gilbert. So,
okay.
You know, he's likely in next year. You know, if the trend continues the way it did this year and they pick up votes with Gilbert gone. And you know, Gunkel and Fuller as a tag team, though, you know, still just kind of missing it. But, you know, again, what kills me is the Armstrongs. The run they've had here, the 80s, the 90s, and throughout the last decade as well, you know, with the independents and working as well as they did. I mean, it's not just about Bob and Brad. We got Scott and Steve in there as well, so... It's all combinations of the Armstrongs, of which they, you know, their primary work in Georgia, and you know, a lot of good teams on that list as well, and you know, we'll see how that plays out going forward. Had a lot of write-ins and actually some that had fallen out. What does happen? Let me go to the rules and make sure I explain this the right way. Don't want to screw this up. Typically, what we've done before is. An individual must be selected on 75% of the ballots to be inducted. Those who go unselected on 100% of the ballots for three consecutive years, that means zero votes, nobody voted for them, they get removed from the ballot at that point. What we had done is, in addition to that, anybody that receives no selections at all on 50% of the ballots is removed after five consecutive years. What we have done for that with the expansion of the selection committee this year, we started that clock over again for people that were maybe just about to fall off of it, just to give them one more shot at getting in there per our rules and the way the process works. I will say this, getting on the, or at least write-in votes, and I was really surprised that we had omitted them, and I can't remember if they had fallen off in years past. I'd have to go back and look at it, but Don and Red McIntyre. They were put in as a write-in. I had forgotten all about them, and I don't know why they were not on, other than the fact that they must have fallen out at some point previously. Lenny Montana as well. He had a hell of a run here in the 60s. And,
yeah.
He was omitted as well. So you know, some of that could have been just clerical error over the years. Well, you know, we'll obviously fix that by having them back on the ballot. Going to see some new names on next year as well. But anyway, that essentially is our discussion for the Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame for the 2011 class. And congrats to everybody. And actually, we've got a caller here from Georgia. Let's maybe they're calling in to talk about the Hall of Fame. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, that's Charlie Smith. Hello, Charlie Smith. Here's a Hall of Famer. How you doing, Charlie?
Great, gentlemen. I just want to congratulate Rich on his ninth year of Georgia wrestling history. I think he's done an excellent job.
Well,
that's the reason I called in. And I agree with everybody else on the Wrestling Hall of Fame, too. Has some good selections. But I'm mainly calling in for Rich. I think you did a wonderful job on this Georgia wrestling history.
Well, man, I do thank you.
Yes, sir.
You're the legend here.
I've been around a while. I hope I'm around a little while longer.
I have no doubt you'll be here on our 20th anniversary, right?
Yeah, I'm 81 now.
Yeah, all right. Well, you'll be here on number 20.
Oh, yes, sir. Really. I hope so, sir.
Absolutely.
If nothing happened.
Nah, we ain't going to let nothing happen to you.
I hope not, sir.
All right, Charlie.
Well, I just want to call and congratulate you, sir. And everybody.
All right, man. Yeah, on behalf of everybody at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, man, I absolutely appreciate it.
Yes, sir. You done an excellent job, sir.
All right. Glad to do it for you guys.
Good night,
right,
gentlemen.
All right, take care.
All right, Charlie.
All right, always fun to have Charlie. And but anyway, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer as well.
In this Hall of Fame, dude, just thinking about Stan Hansen. Just looking at that, dude, Stan Hansen and the Road Warriors. If there was ever any, just growing up watching them. Sorry, just had a flashback there, Rich.
Oh, that's okay. Stan Hansen was awesome. He is absolutely awesome.
Got to get his book, too. It's been translated into English, and I'm dying to get it. Meltzer's talked it up, and it's, I guess it's pretty expansive. And, obviously there's a lot about Japan I want to see, but there's a lot about the run in WWF and in Georgia and the places he's gone and the people he's worked for that hopefully it's a pretty expansive history of them.
Yeah, and I want to try to get him on the air here pretty soon, too. He'd be a great guy to talk to. He'd absolutely.
Oh, God, absolutely.
All right, well, let's go ahead and plug stuff we got coming up. Of course, anybody that wants to check in on Les, you can send him an email at les@epwt.com.
I think I'm making you sick over the phone.
Yeah. You can actually hook him up for a training seminar and look for him maybe this week, I don't know, on Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly over at the Wrestling Observer website. Let's see, I've plugged enough for Les. How about you, Mike? What do you got?
Having Mike Big Audio Nightmare being recorded sometime soon, talking about things in Japan, hockey, and a bunch of other stuff as well at WrestlingObserver.com. And then I may or may not be on Wrestling Observer Live this coming Sunday from 6 to 8 on sportsbyline.com, WrestlingObserver.com. Actually, go there because there's been a zillion ways to listen to the show now with all these applications for your smartphones and all of that sort of stuff. So just go over there Saturday or Sunday from 6 to 8, and we'll actually be going to the Redskins 49ers game.
All right.
Old Falcon rivals. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to record sometime Saturday night, or Josh Nason or somebody like that will be able to do the show live on tape, possibly live with Brian Alvarez on Sunday. So there you go.
Which has to be the hardest job in wrestling radio.
It's not easy.
All right. Before we get out of here tonight, I do want to thank Jen Holbrook and for all her fabulous work. She actually lost her voice for a little bit, and we've had a bunch of new shows added to the network here, including OVW Overview and Georgia Wrestling Now, and of course recently Midnight Black Mass. I'll get all this out eventually, and got a few other treats coming up for you soon as well. She's been doing some new audio for us, and actually has redone, in case you missed our intro tonight, has redone all new audio for all the shows. So got a lot of cool stuff there. We thank her. It did take her a while to get it because she was having some voice problems, but she has got that beautiful thing back, and we do thank the lovely Jen Holbrook for her work behind the scenes with that. Let's see. Want to remind everybody that tomorrow night, Peach State Pandemonium, we will go into the Hall of Fame class of 2011 in depth and probably revisit a little bit into the history. I know those guys talked about it a little bit as it stood last week. That was before they knew this class, and that was also, I guess, a prequel to this week's show. I believe they had some questions as well, or maybe some stuff to go back to, not just 2011, but back beyond. So I'll be on there with them tomorrow night for a little bit and break it down. Excuse me, break it down in a little more detail than we did tonight, perhaps. And let's see, what else we got going on? You can always check us out at ringsiderap.com. Want to also check out georgiawrestlinghistory.com for everything going on in and around Georgia. And that's it for me. We will be back here next week. Hopefully we'll have a guest with us next week. We'll work on that. Like as we said earlier, we'll be talking a lot of Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate because a lot of that coming up here soon, this weekend, next weekend, throughout November. Any last thoughts, Mike?
I hope this Robitussin kicks in soon.
What's that?
I hope this Robitussin kicks in soon.
Oh, there you
go.
Nine
over here. Jesus.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next time.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. A production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.